Welcome to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown, and today I'll be talking to Brian Frederick, who is one of the three authors of American Presidential Candidate Spouses, The Public's Perspective. The book was published by Palgrave Macmillan this year. Two other authors are Laurel Elder and Barbara Burrell, but I have Brian on the phone today. Brian, how are you doing?
I am doing terrific. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Absolutely. Such a pleasure. Pleasure to have read the book. Before we talk about it, maybe you can just take a moment to introduce yourself and also Laurel and Barbara.
Yes, I am the chair of the political science department at Bridgewater State University. My co-author, Laurel Elder, is a professor at Hartwood College in New York. And my other co-author is Barbara Burrell. She's now retired, but formerly a faculty member at Northern Illinois University and one of the leading experts on gender and politics going back for several decades.
Yeah, how did the three of you come together to work on this project? What's the start of the collaboration?
It happened several years ago. Actually, Laurel and Barbara had met at a conference and had found that they had similar interest in investigating public opinion toward candidate spouses, particularly after Michelle Obama took over the role as first lady. They thought that extending some of the earlier research that Barbara had done on public opinion towards Hillary Clinton would be a great research idea. And I had worked with Laurel and Barbara on other projects, and they inquired whether I wanted to be involved. And I said yes. And so we published an earlier paper in Presidential Studies Quarterly looking at public opinion towards presidential candidate spouses and through Michelle Obama in 2008. And then Laurel and I updated that research for the 2012 campaign with Ann Romney and Michelle Obama once again. And from that paper, Palgrave Macmillan reached out to us and asked whether we'd like to write a book on public opinion towards presidential candidate spouses. And we said, well, hey, let's try it. And we got together and it worked out. And I think we came up with a pretty good finished product.
Yeah, the book is super interesting. And I wonder, though some of the focus is more contemporary, I wonder if you could place the broad topic, in some historical context. That is, how far back does this idea of a presidential spouse as an important component of a campaign go? And are there any important historical breaks that matter in how to think about presidential spouses? So would you place this kind of in history for us?
Yeah, I would say 1992. Is a critical year in terms of reimagining the role of the presidential candidate spouse in the campaign. So for your listeners, just kind of the background on that presidential election year, President George H.W. Bush was running for reelection that year, and he was pretty unpopular due to the downturn in the economy that had occurred. And he was looking for any popular surrogate that he could get to try to boost his campaign. And he had a great one in Barbara Bush, who our time series shows is the most popular presidential candidate spouse going back from 1988 to 2016. And so even though she embodied a very traditional image of the first lady, she also was a very popular individual who the Bush campaign wanted to be out there advocating on behalf of George H.W. Bush. And so they had her give a televised speech at the Republican National Convention, which hadn't been done before. And also in 1992, we had Hillary Clinton campaigning and embracing feminist values and basically saying two for the price of one was kind of the philosophy of the Clinton campaign, meaning that if you elect Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton is also going to play a major role in the administration. And so that was a departure from what presidential candidate spouses had promised in the past. And so since 1992, I think there's been a public and political expectation that whether they like it or not, the presidential candidate spouses are going to be major surrogates for their respective presidential candidates. And that trend has continued up until the most recent presidential election.
Now, Brian, you've already jumped ahead and told all the spoilers from the end of the book. So before we get to all of those, maybe we can set this up even more, sure. which is why we should care about this. What's the case that you make in the book that this matters? We can sort of understand that these are historically significant people now, but in sort of theoretical sense, why should we care about how the public views presidential spouses during a campaign? What's the case that the three of you make in the book?
Well, we argue that they're unique political actors. Presidential candidates obviously have a number of surrogates who can speak out and testify on behalf of why that person would make a good presidential candidate, why they would do a good job as president. Most of those are politicians, and you know, they can cite the policy reasons or the political reasons or their interactions with them in the political process. But the presidential candidate's spouses are unique in that they can provide personal testimony. And so the office of the presidency is one where we develop more personal connections than we might otherwise would with other lower offices. And so these particular political actors have the ability to give us reassurance that this person has the personal attributes that are what we would expect or require of a president. And they have intimate knowledge of who they are as a person. And so there's a desire from the public to hear about, hear what they have to say, particularly as it regards the qualifications of the presidential candidate and what they would do if they became president. And so from that standpoint, the public has become more and more interested in what they've had to say. And as media platforms have multiplied, there's a need to cover more aspects of the campaign to satisfy that demand on cable news, the internet, and other digital platforms. And so covering the speeches and the messages of the candidate spouses has increased. And so that's generated more public interest in who they are. And so that's also been reflected in the increased numbers of poll questions that have been asked about them over the years. In the 1988 campaign, that was the first time we were able to find questions in the Roper Center archive about the candidate spouses and whether the public had a favorable view of them, Barbara Bush and Kitty Dukakis. But there was only one poll question. Since then, that's multiplied substantially, particularly in 1992 and 1996 with Hillary Clinton, where there's the most poll questions asked by the media related to her as a candidate spouse over the years. And so what we found is that that polling interest is also tracking increased interest from the public.
Now, a lot of the book is about the traditional notions the public might have of presidential spouses and cases where these traditions are challenged in some way. How do you approach this comparison between an old and a new traditionalism? What does it mean what is sort of the conventional notion of what the public has expected? And then we'll talk a little bit about, you know, the cases where this has changed somewhat.
Sure. So the position of first lady is very gendered. So the public has expected that person is going to embrace traditional gender norms, that they're going to be a supportive wife, that they're going to care for the children, but that they're also going to represent the country effectively as first lady at public events and ceremonial events and that sort of thing. And to the extent that they are going to speak out on things, they're very non-controversial topics like, literacy and healthy eating and support for veterans' families, those kinds of non-controversial causes. So that's very much in the traditional mold of what we would expect a first lady to do. But where things have changed, and that really, I think, took off in the 1992 presidential campaign, is this idea that we argue that there's a new traditionalism, that yes, that the public has those traditional expectations, and they don't want, for instance, somebody who's in the office of first lady to take on a major policy role like a Hillary Clinton did. and potentially a Bill Clinton would have if Hillary Clinton was elected president and he was the first gentleman. But they still want a presidential candidate spouse who's active on the campaign trail, who is a visible surrogate for the presidential candidate, him or herself. And so we asked an original poll question of a national sample about just that question. And we found that about 70% of the public expects the presidential candidate spouse to be visible and to be a presence on the campaign trail advocating on behalf of the presidential candidate. And so that very much fits in with this model that the public is expecting to hear from the presidential candidate spouse. And so sort of balancing that new traditionalism, being able to fulfill those traditional gendered expectations while at the same time being an adept and effective surrogate for the presidential candidate is how the spouses who are able to balance that most effectively gain the highest level of popularity.
So you've already talked briefly about the 1992 race, the one that many people know about. But what that race didn't feature was race and religion in the same way later races have featured that those two important political factors. They did feature heavily in 2008. I wonder how that election illustrates the role of race and religion and how the public reacted to the two candidate spouses, Michelle Obama and Ann Romney.
Yes. So 2012 was a campaign of historic firsts. Obviously, President Obama was the first African-American president and running for re-election. And so Michelle Obama was the first African-American first lady. And so that obviously put the issue of race at the forefront. But we also had Mitt Romney becoming the first Mormon to ever win the nomination for president of a major party. And thus, Ann Romney was aspiring to be the first Mormon first lady. And so in that particular race, what we see is another theme that we put forward in the book, that the position of first lady and presidential candidate spouse provides symbolic representation for historically underrepresented groups. And so for African Americans, Michelle Obama was enormously popular. Even after you controlled for all the traditional demographic political factors, African Americans viewed her more favorably. And obviously, evaluations of race and racial progress, racial resentment, those who scored higher on that scale evaluated Michelle Obama more negatively. Those who scored lower evaluated her more positively. The same thing is true with evaluations of Mormons in the 2012 campaign, using the rating, feeling thermometer rating in the ANAS scale of Mormons, that was positively related towards evaluations of Ann Romney. And also, when you looked at the demographic data, Ann Romney enjoyed some of her highest ratings from people who described themselves as Mormon. And so from that standpoint, 2012 really made a connection in terms of individual voters out there who were looking at the presidential candidate spouses for representation in their government. But interestingly, the media didn't necessarily follow suit. If you look at the poll questions that were asked during the course of the 2012 campaign, none of them posed questions about the historical significance of either one of the candidate spouses. And part of the fact that they didn't necessarily get as much media attention is that we say they both avoided scandal. They both did a pretty good job of advocating on behalf of the presidential candidate that they were supporting. And so the media didn't devote that much attention to those aspects of the campaign. And I think both Romney and Obama, the presidential candidates, didn't want to inject race and religion because they felt like that there was potential to damage either one of their campaigns. So it was sort of an interesting subplot that the voters themselves developed attachments to Obama and Romney based on those symbolic representational first, but the media didn't necessarily follow suit in its coverage.
So 2016 is the last election, last presidential election, and last chapter of the book. And it also poses an interesting first. Bill Clinton was the first major presidential spouse who was not a woman. I wonder if you could talk about his role in the campaign and the way the public responded to him as a presidential candidate spouse. And can you separate that from the other things that make him so significant in that campaign?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult. So obviously, he was the first male presidential candidate spouse, as you mentioned. But in so many other ways, he was unique in that he was a former president, that he had such a visible profile that's a much higher profile than any other non-incumbent spouse over the course of our time series. So a very small percentage of the public was unable to evaluate him, but most people had an opinion. And so that was very polarized compared to other presidential candidate spouses. And we argue that in 2016, we saw the presidential candidate spouses being the most unpopular in the history of our time series, just as the presidential candidates were, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. For Bill Clinton, we argue that he violated new traditionalism in that he promised to play a major policy role in Hillary Clinton's administration. In fact, she said during the campaign at one point that he would be her chief economic policy advisor, and that she would use him in that role. And so that sort of harkened back when she played a major role in his administration supporting the healthcare policy. And so I think the polling evidence overwhelmingly indicates that the public does not want the first spouse, whether they're male or female, to play a significant policy role. And so that sort of undermined Bill Clinton's ability to rise above normal kind of partisan back and forth that many other presidential candidate spouses have. And so he registered a higher disapproval rating than most of the previous presidential candidate spouses because of it.
Now, moving ahead to the future, and you're just sort of speculating here, one of the things that you learned from the book is that presidential spouses have typically been quite popular, more popular sometimes even than the candidates themselves. But 2016 suggests a change in this, the change that you just described with Bill Clinton. Do you anticipate in the future that our polarized politics will ultimately infect the views the public have of candidate spouses and what happened in 2016 with Bill Clinton, some of the negative views of him as a presidential spouse will persist and grow stronger over time, and so that spouses may be viewed very much the same as candidates. What do you expect for the future?
Well, I expect to see that the idea of negative partisanship that Alan Abramowitz and others have articulated, this idea that we don't so much love our own party, but we just hate the opposition party, that there's a much larger base of negative sentiment towards any political actor in the opposite party than there used to be. And so you could say, comparing Michelle Obama, she was able to generate a higher favorability rating, but she couldn't reach the level that Barbara Bush did. In 1992, more Democrats had a positive view of Barbara Bush than a negative view. That's not going to happen anytime soon. So we're not going to get back to the stratospheric level of popularity that Barbara Bush was able to achieve. But I do think Michelle Obama showed a model that there, if you do comply with the new traditionalism and are able to be adept at handling the job, that you can still generate high favorability ratings that go beyond most of the political figures At the national level. And part of that has to do with the sympathy factor. So we found in our polling that about 25% of the public thinks that presidential candidate spouses should be treated differently, that they should be given more sympathy because you don't choose to be a presidential candidate spouse. Your spouse makes that decision. And because you want to be supportive, you campaign on their behalf. It's like anything in life. When a family member in our lives does something, maybe we don't necessarily agree with it or want to be involved, but we want to be supportive. There's a large segment of the public that feels the same way and gives some degree of sympathy. For 2016, I think the trend towards negativity was exacerbated just because we had such unpopular presidential contenders, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. If in the future we get candidates that are a little bit more popular, I think that will weigh less on the presidential candidate spouses, and to the degree that either whether they're male or female, they can fit in with the public expectations. I think it's possible that they can achieve similar ratings to Michelle Obama, which weren't as high as Barbara Bush, but certainly we're not going to go back to the days anytime soon where the cross-party appeal of the presidential candidate spouses was as high as it was back in the late 80s and early 90s.
Again, the book is American Presidential Candidate Spouses, The Public's Perspective. The authors are Laurel Elder, Brian Frederick, and Barbara Burrell. Brian, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.